Okay, good morning, everybody. We're continuing in Sefer Yeshua, and today's lesson is a really hard one. We're in Perek Zion, and we're discussing the division of the tribal portion of Yosef that was furthermore divided amongst Ephraim and Menashe. We discussed how Menashe was divided up. And we gave a whole bunch of reasons why it's the tribe of Yosef that has this mission, so to speak, of being divided up. And the whole idea of Ephraim being the portion where the Beis HaMikdash is, in Binyamin, which also goes together with Yosef, and how they weren't involved in the sale of Yosef. On the other hand, we see that still in all, Ephraim gets split up. Menashe gets split up because, you know, due to him, the tribes had to rip their garments when they were found out that the cup was with them. And therefore, they were split up. So it seems that insofar that Yehuda may have lost out his portion of having the Beis HaMikdash totally in his place because of his involvement in the Mechira, the sale of Yosef, it doesn't appear that the tribe of Yosef gets so scot-free off either for what happened. So there's a very important concept, and you find this a lot. You find this a lot, for example, with the Asore Haruge Malchus, the 10 Tzaddikim, Rabbi Akiva and his friends, who were martyred. And we're told that the reason that they were martyred, it was an atonement for the sin of the brothers who were involved in the sale of Yosef. So the question that is asked is, that why are there 10 martyrs? There should be just 9 martyrs. Why? Because how many brothers were involved in the sale of Yosef? It was 9. There were 9 of them who sold Yosef, because Binyamin wasn't there and Reuven wasn't there. So simple math will tell you there's only 9 brothers, but the 10th was Yosef. So, Chumash here. Brian, can you get me a Chumash, please? So, we got to understand, so it seems that Yosef is also involved in terms of responsibility for the sale of Yosef. In other words, he's at fault as well. Because if he wasn't at fault, there should have been 9 martyrs. And if he was such a tzaddik, probably these things would not have befallen him. So, if you look carefully at the Psukim in Parshas Vayechi, when the brothers get together, and we'll do a Rambam, which we learned, those who learned the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva, will be able to put things together over here. And it was after the brothers reunited with Yosef, and they're shocked as to what's going on. Let's see where we are now. No wonder I was looking the wrong person. So, if you look carefully at all the psukim that are going on after the brothers get together, and he tells them that he is Yosef, is my father still alive, and the brothers can't answer him. So Yosef tells him, come close to me. I'm Yosef, your brother. You sold me to Egypt. And don't be sad. Don't be angry in your eyes that you sold me, because it was to really save you. It was part of a divine plan. There's many more years left of the hunger in the land, and Hashem sent me there to provide you for a great escape. And he talks, and he tries to not make them feel so bad. Tries to make them not feel so bad. And you'll live in the land of Goshen, and I'll support you. And tell my father that I'm okay, etc., etc. And then he hugs Binyamin, and then he kisses the brothers, and he hugs them, and then being able to speak. But there's something missing. And what's missing? So what's missing is what the Rambam has to say. Rambam talks about tshuva and Yom Kippur and things like that. He says that Yom Kippur can only help for averos between you and Hashem, but not between man and man. That you have to ask for mechila. And he says, even if people only hurt you with words, even if you hurt somebody with words, you still have to ask for his forgiveness and to go to him until he asks for mechila. Lo ratza chaver limcholo, if the friend doesn't want to forgive him, then you bring a bunch of people to ask three times. If he still doesn't want to forgive him, right, he says, v'zesh lo mochal hu hachote. And the one who doesn't forgive, he is the sinner. So Rambam says, if somebody does an injustice to you and you don't forgive them, you are still considered the sinner. So the question is, he's still considered, why is he considered a sinner? He didn't do the Avera. The other guy did the Avera. The other guy hurt his feelings. The other guy did this, did that. And so I don't forgive him. What's the problem? I didn't do anything wrong. But, in subsequent halachas, when the Rambam talks about this idea, he says when a person comes to you and asks you, he says, the next halacha, you shouldn't be cruel and not be appeased, but you should be easy to be appeased. And the person asks for mechila, you should give mechila with a complete heart, with a desirous soul. Right? And even the guy did terrible to you, chatalo harbe, you shouldn't take revenge on him. Because that's the way the Jewish people. So, if you look at it, did Yosef ever forgive the brothers? You look at the text. Did Yosef ever forgive the brothers? Really? If you look carefully in Parshas Vayigash, he makes them feel better. He says, "Don't worry about it. It was part of Hashem's plan, and I mean, I was destined to save you guys, and etc., etc." I mean, what's even interesting is the brothers themselves don't even ask for mechila. They really don't ask. They're too shocked to speak. So maybe just is not capable of talking. So if you can't talk, you can't ask for mechila. You can't ask for forgiveness. But Yosef doesn't offer them any forgiveness. Okay. Then when we come to the very end of Sefer Bereishis, and it's after Yaakov dies, and the brothers are afraid that now Yosef is going to take revenge. And they say to Yosef, you know, our father said that you should... He says, you know, please kindly forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and their sin, for they have done you evil. So now please forgive the spiteful deed of your servants of your father's God. So they said over in Yaakov's name, which many say Yaakov never said that. Gemara says Yaakov never said that. But they said, you know, our father said to you, you should forgive us for the sin. Right? They lied. Yaakov never said that. But they did it, you know, because they were afraid he was going to kill them. So what does it say? So what's Yosef's response? So now they're finally saying, father said you should forgive us. So obviously, he hadn't forgiven them up to that point. Right? Obviously, if he had forgiven them up to that point, they wouldn't have said, father said forgive us. Right? So what's Yosef's response? Vayevk Yosef bedaber, my love. Yosef cried when they spoke to him. And then they throw themselves before them and they say, ready to be your slaves. And Yosef says, what does he say? He says, Al Tiro, don't be afraid. Ketachas Elokim on you, am I in Hashem's place? You thought to do evil to me, and Hashem thought it to be good. So to save you guys. So don't be afraid, I'll support you, I'll take care of your children. And he comforted them and he spoke to their hearts. But he didn't forgive them. Well, they did it through saying their father said you should ask him for mechila. Yeah, so they said, father said, father said, "Oh, please kindly forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and their sin, for they have done evil." I understand, but they said, father said you should forgive them. I'm not saying that they didn't, you know, but that's about as close as they could get to saying they're sorry. Okay. They didn't say it themselves, but they said over and that their father said that. So he keeps making them feel good. He says, "No, don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of, you know, everything's going to be fine." But he doesn't forgive them. And this is really one of the real tragedies in this sefer. You know, why he doesn't forgive them, you know, it's hard to understand exactly why he didn't. Maybe he thought he did. Maybe he thought he went beyond that. It's hard to explain to Yosef, you know, Yosef's actions over here. But one thing he didn't do, he didn't forgive them. He didn't overtly say, "I forgive you for the sin that you did." So, what was the ramifications of this? So that's the problem. That's the thing with the Rambam. The Rambam says, "V'zeh shelo mochal hu hachote." The one who doesn't forgive, he is the sinner. Now, again, the Rambam is speaking where the people are really asking over and over and over, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And the guy still refuses. And he brings a whole group of people. It's interesting, very interesting. The Rambam doesn't bring this, but other Mephorshim bring this. It says, you know, after the first time he says no, it says you bring a group of three people. This other Mephorshim, and Rambam doesn't bring it, says you bring 10 people. Okay, so now you had Binyamin and Reuven. You certainly had 10 people. At this last go, there's 11 even, saying, you know, his father said to forgive us. Okay, but they still didn't say we were sorry. So it's like each one couldn't finish up the job. They couldn't overtly say, "We are sorry, we were wrong." They just said, "Father says, kindly forgive the spiteful deed of your brothers and the sin they have done to you." And Yosef says, "You suspect me." He's crying. He says, "Don't worry. You know, if Hashem doesn't want you to get killed, I certainly couldn't want you to get killed. You know, don't worry. I'll take care of you guys." And he comforted them, but he didn't forgive them. So therefore, what the Rambam says, when he says, "V'zesh lo mochal hu achote," so, why should the guy who doesn't forgive be the sinner? So the Mephorshim bring down a very important concept from the Chidah and others that say that when a person does an Avera, there's a tremendous spiritual negativity existing in the world. It's really the Zohar, right? There's a tremendous negativity. And the only way that negativity can go away is that there has to be a forgiveness of the sin. There has to be a forgiveness of the sin. That forgiveness, so to speak, says, okay, the sin's over. I forgive it. And once you forgive it, the sin is gone. Right? So, that reality of sin is no longer there. Right? And then when the guy asks him and appeases him and does what he can, he says, "Please, please, forgive me." And the friend doesn't want to forgive him. So if the friend doesn't want to forgive him, he enables the reality of sin and the negativity of sin to remain in the world. And therefore, he becomes the sinner. He becomes the sinner. The victim becomes the sinner. Why? He's the chote in the present tense. In the present tense, he is hachote. Who hachote? He is the present sinner, not the past sinner, but the chote, the present sinner, because he's not allowing the sin to be exterminated from the world, and the sin still remains. The negative impact of the sin still remains. It has not been flushed out, and therefore the sin transfers. The effect of the sin transfers from the original violator to the one who refuses to forgive. Now, only in Judaism can you have this. that not only did the guy insult you and make embarrass you in front of everybody and make you feel like 2 cents, and you're hurting badly, on top of that, you have to be magnanimous and say, you know what, I forgive you. And if you don't forgive him, not only your feelings were hurt, but God will punish you for him hurting your feelings. Right? Only in Yiddishkeit do you have this. Nowhere else. Nowhere else. Now, of course, there has to be a sincere forgiveness, asking. If it's not sincere, you don't have to give. Be that as it may, but what is clear is that a sin has to be expunged from the records. And it only happens with an authentic asking and an authentic forgiveness. You don't find that the brothers gave an authentic asking, and you don't find that Yosef gave an authentic forgiveness. Because of that, that sin always kind of hovered. It always hovered and never really was taken care of. So you say, okay, so what happened? So they're all going to get punished. Okay, so that's taka what happens. That's taka why you need a sorry haruge machas and not 9 haruge machas. Because Yosef, for his part, even though it wasn't easy, but he was, you know, he at least should have said to them, so are you asking me for forgiveness or not? He should have clarified. So what's the deal, guys? You know, or at least he should have said, okay, even though you're not asking me for forgiveness, I will forgive you anyway. You know, could be Yosef felt if they can't yet even ask for forgiveness, so what, there's nothing to forgive. The only thing, father said we should ask, you should forgive me. We don't necessarily think we did anything wrong. You see, it's hard to say you're sorry. even after so, it's hard to say you're sorry. And it's harder to forgive someone who doesn't really say he's sorry either. Right? So, be that as it may, the sin remained. And therefore, if the sin remained, then the underlying cause of the sin remained. The fact that there was, you know, suspicion and hatred and non-unity and all these things that existed, it never really was corrected. And therefore, to that extent, Hashem probably always was hoping that one day things would get better, and everybody seemed to suffer because of that. And therefore, Yehuda couldn't have the Beis HaMikdash in his portion, the part that had the Mizbeach, and even Binyamin, where he has the Mizbeach, he still has one part of the Yesod, can't be two parts of the Yesod, the foundation of the Mizbeach, can't be in his portion, and they're still in Yehuda's portion. And Binyamin is so makbid, and he says, and I don't want him to have part of that portion. And he'll never, I won't accede to let him have any part of the Mizbeach. And Yehuda, for his part, even though he built it, says, okay, I'll have to listen to you. It just never seemed to finalize. And therefore, when it comes to Yosef himself, we see that, you know what, you didn't have the part to forgive. Then you're going to have lots of problems, and your tribe is split up. And from you, Menashe gets divided up into two, because you never really united your brothers in the way that it should be. And therefore, your own tribe has to be disunited as well. So something to think about. And of course, as we'll see, as we go into this next story, which this just feeds into this story, and we will see how quite possibly it gets further exacerbated. Well, ultimately, where did the split of the 10 tribes come from? What? No, but which tribe? Right, it's that area of Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh. That area was the central area of the northern kingdom. Yerubim ben Nevat. He came from that area. Okay. Yerubim and Nevat split the tribes against each other. And it's this specific area now that we're dealing with Ephraim and Manasseh, this central northern part of Israel, and you'll see the difficulties, as we will now explain, the difficulties that they have in dealing with their tribal portion. It's kind of, you know, even though he had a double portion, we'll see, he has all kinds of problems, and certainly that had to somehow impact down the line that they were an unhappy Shevet. They were an unhappy Shevet. They were split up, and as we'll see. And therefore, quite possibly, that's clearly why there was that ultimate split later happened amongst the tribes themselves, the 10 and the 2 tribes, is because the forgiveness never happened, and therefore the suffering continued throughout their times that they were in Eretz Yisrael, and continues even as Yeshua is trying to divide up the land at this point. So that is a further explanation, and this will lead us now into the next lesson that we're going to learn right now. Yes? Should be bothered by it. Why shouldn't you be bothered?
The whole story with the cup, with Benjamin and the cup, the Mepharshim, from what I understand, they don't fault Yosef for causing anguish to his brothers because what they say was...
he was trying to get them to do tshuva.
He was trying to set the scenario because he knew that they needed to do complete
They needed to do complete tshuva.
So isn't it possible that his crying when they asked him that was because he was saddened because
he was crying because... He was crying for a number of reasons, but obviously, the Zohar says it was very bad that he couldn't hold himself back anymore, and because of that, the brothers did not ask to complete tshuva.
I meant the crying that we're talking about now, when they said to him, Father says you should forgive us, isn't it possible that he knew they were lying, and more than that, he was saddened by the fact that they couldn't bring themselves to just say to do the tshuva they
It could
to
be.
Say,
It could be he was crying that he didn't ask for Mechila. On a simpler level, he was crying because after all I did for you for the last 17 years to support you guys, you still think I'm going to kill you guys? You still are suspicious of me. I mean, what more do I have to do to cast away your suspicions on me? Could be. Okay, he's still waiting for them to say it, but at the end of the day, they didn't. You know, and that's why I don't remember. I remember there's a story, and I don't remember the details of the story. It's too far back in my mind to retrieve. But there was a maysa that somebody, one person, righteous people, but one hurt the other person's feeling. And the guy says, do you forgive me? He says, yeah. He says, but with real forgiveness? Like Mechila Gemura, like you really remeichel me, really, 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 from the depths of your heart. So he asked him, why are you nudging me so much? I said, I forgive you. He says, yeah, I want it to be real, because if it's not real, then he went into the whole thing with Yosef. If it's not real, then you know what? There's going to be problems still. So therefore, I want to make sure there's real forgiveness over here. So that clearly didn't happen. And because it didn't happen, it just keeps spilling over. What? Okay, so even if not asked, you can still forgive. Can't you forgive somebody if they don't ask?
Yeah, you can.
And at least it removes your part of the problem,
yeah.
Right? At least you're saying, from my part, maybe you want to say it's lifnim mishur sadin, it's beyond the letter of the law. But at the end of the day, here's the bottom line, you know. At the bottom, maybe he wouldn't be called Nachsori if they didn't ask. But the point being, at the end of the day, is the sin still floating around? The sin still floating around? You know, okay, he didn't ask you.
If he's mochel and they didn't do...
Let's put it this way. If he's mochel and they don't do complete tshuva, at least one thing, he has nothing to do with it anymore. I have nothing to do with it anymore. I've done what I can. I'll forgive you even though you haven't done tshuva. So there's nothing holding back on my part. It could be, you know, people don't ask because they think the guy won't forgive them. It could be all kinds of reasons. But you certainly, are we going to say mitzad adin, if the guy doesn't ask you for forgiveness, mitzad adin, according to the letter of the law, you don't have to forgive him. He didn't ask you, so you don't have to ask. But at the end of the day, it still hovers. The aver still hovers. So to go beyond the letter of the law, there certainly is a place to say, listen, I forgive you even though you haven't asked me. There's a place for that. Okay, we're talking about big tzaddikim over here. I mean, people who should have, you know, tried more. Yosef, he's the meat of Yesod. You're trying to bind everybody together. So, you know, he's not asking for forgiveness. At least offer forgiveness. As I say, it's an inyan misubach. It's a very complicated issue in human dynamics over here. But he, at the end of the day, or at least he should have said, so are you guys asking for forgiveness or are you not asking for forgiveness? He didn't quite clarify, so tell me how you guys feel about this. engage them in further dialogue, whatever. Try to bring out that they will ask for total forgiveness. It just didn't happen. And the fact that it didn't happen, and Yosef obviously, you know, didn't encourage it as much as he could have to make it happen. So to that degree, he's responsible. We find that many tzaddikim that, you know, that when people were not nice to them, the tzaddikim, you know, often when someone hurts your feelings, you stay away from the person who hurts your feelings. So certain tzaddikim would make it their business to be near the person who hurt their feelings to give them the opportunity to ask for forgiveness. Right? So you kind of try to push it a little bit that the forgiveness is asked, even though the guy's not coming to me. So you see there is that aspect, and Yosef just didn't do it. He just didn't do it. Again, so you're saying because they didn't ask.
I just feel that because, you know, of what he did, maybe he was trying and he was there.
You know, I guess he could have said, listen, I've done everything I can. I made them feel better. I comforted them like this, like that, and I'm waiting. And could be, maybe he said, you know, maybe, you know, they still lived many, many years after the end of, say, Parshas Vayechi. They lived many, Yosef was only 56 when his father passed away. There's still another 54 years to go that they lived together. Maybe he was hoping that one day they would, and I guess, you know, time passed and it just didn't happen, and let it go, whatever, and just went on with their lives without asking for the forgiveness over there.
And the other question is, wasn't Reuven held responsible at all? He still should have provided the leadership there. To me, the tenth person was more likely.
Well, but Reuven, Reuven did not plan on selling him, and he planned on saving him, and he was taken out before he could save them, and so he had clearly been doing tshuva, and he was the one. What was he supposed to say? What did he do to Yosef? He only threw him in the pit so he would be saved. So he didn't do anything, but he just did that. He wasn't strong enough to put his foot down and say, we're not going to do this. But vis-a-vis Yosef, he didn't do anything wrong with Yosef. He put him in the pit with the intention to save him afterwards. So you can't say he was at fault. He was at fault. He didn't show good enough leadership vis-a-vis the brothers. Okay. But at the end of the day, he stopped them from killing him. Number one, they were going to kill him. At least stop them from killing him. Threw him in the pit. He was going to come back. They didn't save him. They sold him before he could save him. Okay, and he felt terrible about that. So, but clearly Yosef is not a guiltless party in the story. Clearly not a guiltless party over here. And therefore, he continues to suffer with his tribal difficulties, as we will now see in this next section over here. So let's move ahead. We'll begin this piece today, and we'll have to go into tomorrow as well. It's a very, very difficult piece coming up over, as you'll quickly see. Okay, we're on Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 17, verse 11. We're in the middle of giving out the land to Ephraim. And we discuss how they got on the east bank. And there's a whole discussion, I'm not going to get into it, but no, Slavchad, that they were given certain portion as well amongst those in Menashe. And Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Beis and Yud Gimel are very difficult to understand. And then the next ones are even more difficult. I'm really getting you excited to learn these Pesukim over here. But I was just spending hours on this. It's just so... But it's worthwhile just to see the problems they have. There is it's an important message over here. And you learn at least two important messages, even though we don't have total clarity. The Mefarshim are just mind-boggling. There's so many arguments within the Mefarshim as to how the land was given up. So therefore, there's going to be so many different opinions how to describe what's going on over here. But Bekitzer and Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Vayehi leMenashe, the tribe of Menashe also had land, beYisachar uBeAsher, in the lands of Yisachar and Asher as well. They were given land as well. They were given certain cities. So, you're looking for Yisachar and Asher. If you're looking on your maps, so that makes a lot of sense that Menashe was given. Because if you look at this map, whichever map you're looking at, right on top of Menashe, on Menashe's eastern, northeastern border is the tribe of Yisachar. Right. So that's one. And Asher is on the northwestern border is Asher. Right? So they were given some cities over there as well. Now, why they were given cities, the Malbim will explain later why they were given cities. The simple pshat is so, you know, they got some extra land as well. And where did they give them cities? They gave them Beis Sha'an Uvenoseha. They gave them the area of Beis Sha'an and any other area, you know, cities around, little suburbs of that area. And the city of Yivla'am. It's another city. Uvenoseha and the little villages around there. And also he was given an area that had three large provinces, so to speak. There's Yoshve Dor Uvenoseha and the inhabitants of Dor and the villages around that. V'yoshve Ein Dor, and those who lived in Ein Dor, Uvenoseh, and the villages over there. V'yoshve Tanach, Uvenoseh, and the ones who lived in Tanach, and Ta'anach, and its villages. V'yoshve Megiddo, Uvenoseh, and the Yoshve Megiddo, Uvenoseh. Shloshes Hanofes, in all these three provinces. So, there seems to be many other cities that they were given in Menashe and Yisachar. And the Torah continues, Yud Beis, V'lo yochlu b'nei Menashe lohorish es ha'orim ha'ela. And Menashe could not drive out those cities. V'yoel ha'knani loshoves rezos, and the Canaanites wanted to continue to live in these cities. Yud Gimel, v'yiki chosku b'nei Yisrael, v'yitna sa'knanim l'mas. And when later on, when the Jews got a little bit stronger, so they at least made the Canaanites pay taxes, but for Horesh Horishu, but driving them out, they couldn't drive them out. Okay, it's very difficult to understand, like, exactly where this is fitting in over here. We will see. We'll see the next psukim. So just keep these psukim in mind. On the simple level, this was part of their portion. They couldn't drive them out. That's on the simple level. But here's the point that really gets important. Pasuk Yudalad. Vayidabru b'nei Yosef es Yoshua leimor. The children of Yosef speak to Yeshua saying, we've got to keep that in mind, it says b'nei Yosef, so who is exactly coming? Is it Ephraim? Is it Menashe? But it's b'nei Yosef. And said, Madua nosato li nachala goral echot v'chevel echot v'ani amrav ad asher ad kobe rachani Hashem. Why did you give me one lottery, one portion, and I am a great nation, not so much that Hashem blessed me? So what's going on? In other words, you gave me a small portion, like you gave me like one portion, and I've got a lot of people, and it's not enough for us. So that's a little bit hard to understand. You're looking at this map, there's a heck of a lot of land in Menashe. Right? Menashe's got a lot of land over there. Okay, we'll see. Maybe all of it isn't so inhabitable. Ephraim definitely has less than Menashe. Right? But they're saying, you know, we don't have enough. Right? So again, there's like major trouble. I mean, look how much land they got over there. Menashe's got a ton of land. But they say, no, we don't have enough. We have too many people, and the land is not enough. Right? This is a reason for pause. So, like, how could that be? How could that be? I mean, on many levels, how could that be? So let's look in the book that we just gave out. Let's start. We'll start today, and we'll have to continue tomorrow. We're on the very first page of the new handout. It should be on the right-hand side, right on the lower right-hand side. Lo yimatze lanu hahor. Right, that's the name of the title, but we'll see. So let's read. Acharesha girl birer es nachla shifte Yosef. Now that the lottery clarified where the tribal portion of Yosef is, v'nachla dischalka l'shnei shvatim, and that portion was divided into two. Remember, they were first given it as one, and then from the one, it was split into two. Lo yochlu b'nei Menashe lahorish es nachlasam be'emek Yisrael be'emek Beis Sha'an. the tribe of Manasseh is not able to drive out from their Nachala, from the valley of Yisrael and the valley of Beis Sha'an. Now, the simple meaning is these are the cities that is mentioned it's cities in Yisachar and Asher, so even more than what they had. They couldn't drive them out. Haknani Nisha Yoshua, the Kanani remained there. Varaka Sher Chaski Saul Nasubas, only when the Jews got stronger later on, they taxed them. Avalamais, at the end of the day, Lo Yochul Benim Asher Lishashisham, the name in Asher could not live there. So Tzimtzum Ezori Nachalasam, the constrainment of their region, of their portion, caused them Lisnon Lislonain Lifne Yeshua, to complain before Yeshua, as the bold words are written on the bottom and up to the next page, the pasuk we just read. Look at the next page, the third line. So what is it they're complaining about? What are they talking about? Bitchilas divrei, in the beginning of their words, hiskiru rakas ribui b'nei shiftim. They mention they have a lot in their shevet. Shalok kederech hatev, which is not normal. Heimtanu, their point was, shem am rav, a big nation, mi birchas Hashem, that Hashem blessed. Right? They were blessed. Kasher yatsu me Mitzrayim, because when they left Egypt, here's an interesting thing. Lohoy yashev Menashe, ela shnaim ushloshim elf masayim. The tribe of Menashe, when they left Egypt, was only 32,200. Which was not a very big tribe. It's Hashevet HaKotan B'Yoser. It was the smallest tribe, was Menashe, when they left Egypt. When they were counted again, 40 years pass, and in Arvus Moav they're going to come in. They already went up to 52,700. So what kind of an increase is that? From 32,000 to 57,000, that's a 25,000 person increase. That's a big increase. That's almost doubled. Almost doubled what they were. When they went out of Egypt, through Egypt. Big increase. Toch karboim shonahem yisrabu ve'esrim el v'chamesh meos. In these 40 years, they went up over 25,000. Yosem yikol shevecha, more than any other shevet. V'im nitzarev yachet shifte Ephraim and Asher, you put the two tribes together, nimtze sheshevet Yosef kulo godol. Now, on the other hand, Ephraim went down by 8,000. Went down by quite a bit. So it comes out at the end of the day, Kulo Godol Vishneim Elef Asor Elef Chamesh Mios Rabbi Mishael. They went up net 12,000. Okay, you gotta calculate the numbers exactly. But they had a net increase. Ribi Godol Yosem Kol Sherechot. They increased more than anybody together. Even if you put the two together, they went more than anybody else. And together they were the biggest portion. You put the two of them together, they were the biggest tribe. More than anybody else. And certainly during the 14 years of conquest, there was more increase. This increase becomes the background to understand their complaint, and which will lead us to the following questions that we'll start tomorrow. But what we already see is going on is that the tribe of Menashe is growing like crazy. And therefore, we will see that initial giving of the land would not be enough for them. Would not be enough for them. Why that won't be enough, that gets us into a big machlokas that we'll talk about tomorrow. And we'll see that having many children causes all kinds of financial concerns. So we'll continue this tomorrow. We're all prepared to really dig into this sugya tomorrow, Mirzah Shem.